Hey, I'm Jason, and welcome to Season 3 of the Tales from the Pit podcast. Welcome to Tales from the Pit, the behind-the-lens access to the entertainment world and the creative people involved. Today, we have photographer, content creator, tour photographer. He's worked with so many great artists. He's got such a ton of excellent photos and experience and everything like that. I'm super excited to welcome Danilo Lewis. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Yeah, you and I have been kind of playing phone tag or email tag for a while to try to get this going. Yeah. So it's super cool that we could finally figure this out. What we usually like to do is sort of get a little background on you. What was your maybe history growing up? I don't know if photography was a thing for you as a child, was music. What was your sort of introduction to kind of push you into that direction?
Well, the introduction was definitely my mother. She is an artist herself, in a lot of different mediums. I kind of just gravitated towards it, even though I didn't go to school for photography. I didn't go to school for an art degree. It always was kind of a part of my life. And, it was always like that hobby. Like, you know, I did painting, I did drawing, eventually moved to photography sort of thing. But it was never like, it was just a hobby. It was never anything that I took seriously. Never anything that I was like, oh, let me figure out what I need to learn. To me, I was like, I just want to point a camera somewhere. If I like it, good. If I don't, it's okay too. That's kind of like how photography was like involved in my life early on. And then later on in my, you know, as I got older, that interest sort of kind of sparked where it made me want to dive deeper into it. But at that time I had a day job. I was in finance. I did wealth management, a completely different life and world. I always joke. I was like, you know, in my previous life, I did X, Y, and Z. Photography is like the new renaissance, my new life sort of thing.
Yep. Yeah. Where did you grow up? What area?
I grew up in Potomac, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C., East Coast boy.
Yep.
Cool.
So pretty much. So was your mother a photographer, or is she just sort of an artist in a general sense?
An artist in a general sense, like, you know, I would say from when I can remember, like I said, let's say like five, sixes around there. She was a painter. She did tons of paintings, had a lot of gallery showings. She sold her art. Like, you know, we're talking about, you know, we're talking like the type of, you know, oil on canvas with, you know, probably a frame that costs as much as a car. You know, because it's all about how it's being framed.
Yeah.
And then later on, it moved on to more jewelry. Like, you know, she had a jewelry line for a while. And photography was always in there in the mix. She always had a ton of film cameras. Eventually moved to digital as well. Had like, I remember she had, I want to say it was like a Panasonic, like one of the first digital Panasonic cameras. You know, everything was like kit lens. Yeah, everything. But I do remember that it was like silver, one of those like first silver ones. So it was always there. It wasn't like her number one thing, number one passion from her art. But, you know, she loved to do it. She loved to take photos. That was like sort of my introduction to the photography wise.
Yeah. Build that foundation when you were young. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So moving forward, at what point, how does a camera get? Where does that spark come from? What happens at that point?
So the spark for me came, I was always that friend with the camera. You know, I was like, oh, you know, Danilo will have a camera for at a party or going out. Whatever the case was, I always had a little, my first one was a Canon Elf point and shoot. Like, I want to say not version one. I want to say it was the Mark II. Of it. I still have it. It's somewhere in the office. I need to refind it. It legit weighs just as much as a 1DX Mark II. And it's a tiny little thing. And, you know, I was always just, again, the friend with the camera. And one of my best friends who at that time was starting to become a music producer in the dance music world had a gig to DJ and was like, hey, do you mind like coming and just like just snapping away whatever you can? I was like, sure. Went, did it, and had a rad time doing it. And his promoter, or the promoter that had booked him for that show, a week later, you know, we posted all the photos on Facebook and some other things. And the promoter was like, hey, like, do you want to come do this for me? And I was like, dude, like, what are we doing? Like, what are we talking about doing? Like, I don't understand. I didn't know that that was a thing, like nightclub photography. That to me was not a thing. And, you know, that's how kind of it all started. And I was like, oh, I can make money out of this. I had no idea. And little by little, I was kind of dove straight headfirst into it. Wanted to learn everything possible. Wanted to find out how I could get better. Obviously, then the gear starts getting better. Yep. So it was all just a journey from that one outing with the camera at a nightclub.
So did you have, I'm assuming because you had cameras, you were playing with cameras, you may have already had an understanding of taking photos and settings and all that sort of stuff. Or were you just kind of, did you have like a training or did you just figure it out on your own? What was that process?
No training, but you know, through my mom, I knew the basics, rule of thirds, ISOs and shutter speeds, like what am I looking for? And, you know, some of my earliest ways that I kind of explored how or learned to explore essentially was like going on Flickr and seeing like there was all these groups that had like nighttime photography and everyone was sharing their settings. Yep. You know, Flickr in those days, everyone shared everything, every information.
Right.
There was no taboo of like, you know, you could ask, what were your settings? Great, here it is. And no one ever even blinked at it. And I kind of learned from that little by little. Kind of reverse engineering. I would see something. How could I, let me figure out if I could figure it out.
Yep.
And that kind of little by little. And then the more I would find out, the more I was like, okay, like now that I know this, how can I translate this into other areas of photography? How can I make, you know, other forms? Or, you know, especially from the nightlife thing, I was like, you know, how can I translate it to nightlife? And that's kind of how I kind of picked up everything. You know, I don't want to say I'm self-taught because technically, yeah, I might have, you know, no one was there teaching me. I didn't go take a class, but Flickr was there to tell me the settings. You know, there were plenty. I've had plenty of amazing mentors who have been kind enough to, along the way, either guide me from, you know, an artistic view to a business view, like so many different things. So that's kind of like just the beginnings of that. All right. So how do we learn? How do we do this?
Right. Right. So, all right. So you get that. So that producer says, hey, you want to kind of do some stuff with me? What happens there? Are you just kind of, first of all, are you still on East Coast or have you moved?
I'm on the East Coast. Yeah. Still on the East Coast. Yeah, we just went. I just winged it. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I was like, I'm just gonna take photos of my friends because obviously all of us, all who were friends with him, we all went to support him. So I just essentially took photos of our friends and him playing on the DJ decks. And that kind of just how it all started. From there, it was like I said, like the promoter, and then from there is like me venturing into that nightlife photography realm.
Yeah,
you know, low life photography. And, you know, lucky for me is that promoter ended up becoming the biggest promoter in DC for dance music, electronic music, concerts. You know, they currently own Echo Stage and Club Glow, who they just sold to Live Nation. I got a prime education in the world of dance music through him because he was able to put me in his nightclubs where he was booking all these artists, you know, that everyone was, you know, clamoring to see. And, you know, I kind of brag about this just because of who the person is that Avicii's second North American show ever in the US was in Washington, D.C., and I was the photographer for that. But nice. No one knew who Avicii was. No one knew what was to come. And then he ends up becoming a megastar. But that's kind of how I got put into that world, was thanks to this, the promoter there in DC.
You know, we'll probably talk more about this later, but that's really, yeah. You know, it's really about building those relationships and being able to, yeah. You know, be someone that you can comfortably work with and all that stuff. And being, you know, I just want to get out there and just, you know, learn and do my best and put my best foot forward and just kind of just do it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. At that point, I assume you're just kind of shooting for their marketing content or whatever, you know, whatever they're using for the venues.
Everything back then was, Facebook albums.
Right.
You know, everyone wanted to be tagged in the Facebook albums. Everyone would share the album or share their photos. This is when that Facebook algorithm was actually fun. That's what it was for. Like, there was a few times, like, certain things would land on flyers and like email marketing material and that sort of thing. But that's the primary usage for all the stuff that I shot was for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Nice. You know, obviously, like, and the artists would get little, you know, packages from every night. So they would also make sure, because this is like before anyone, like, especially like the DJs would have, you know, tour photographers, tour video. So like the in-house essentially provided, like, a lot of those years, a lot of those early years that you see a lot of the content that was being posted, that was provided by non-touring photographers, provided by venues. And, you know, we didn't know what it would become and, you know, where it would take us all. But, you know, yeah, like, just remembering that right now, thinking about it, I was like, you know, I remember so many times you would get excited. Oh, they shared my photo. And you think about it. Yeah. No one was on tour back then.
Yeah.
And now every DJ has a videographer, photographer, combo, both, you know.
The whole media package. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, so from there, I'm assuming at that point, I'm just guessing, but I'm assuming at that point, you're now building relationships with artists, and that's sort of spreading from there, and now you're becoming more involved directly with artists. Is that what happens?
Yeah, so the team behind the nightclubs and the promotion company that I worked for, they were excellent at, you know, not micromanaging things, where it was like, well, you were the photographer for this. And if there was management or artists requesting photos, they would connect us via email and say like, oh, the Neil Lord photographer took it. He'll send the files for you, the Dropbox, whatever it was at that time. Mm-hmm. And little by little, just started building that Rolodex. A lot of the artists, you know, one of the key things for me was like a lot of the artists kept getting rebooked. And, you know, I would see them, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a year. They already, you know, started to get to know me over, you know, a period of time. And it just became easier, you know, like the photos that I was producing, because I had more access at that moment. Like, just, it just made everything just easier to shoot, easier to communicate. And then that kind of takes me to like the festival, EDM festival world, where all these artists that came to DC to the same nightclub that I worked at, where are all these festivals? And they were just like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm working, you know. And it just kept building from there. It just kept getting bigger and bigger. Yeah. The relationships, like, to me, I always tell everybody, it was like, if you have the chance to be backstage and you're working in whatever capacity and you want to get somewhere, you know, just go out and meet whoever comes. It's around you. Just, you know, networking, you know, you got to extend your hand. You know, you never know who you're going to meet. You know, a lot of the relationships I have now have come from me just standing randomly someplace and just being like, oh, hey, like, you know, just saying hello, essentially.
Yep. And back then, was your shot prior? I mean, were you given like certain things you needed to shoot, or were you just kind of just go ahead and shoot whatever and we'll just use what we like or something like that? Was that the protocol?
No, there was definitely a shot list, extensive, you know, 3, 4, 7 page shot list. Yep. You know, you got the sponsors, you got the artists, activations, you know, the attendees, like there's so many different things from that festival world that you have to cover. And, you know, when I first started, it was, you know, you get assigned to just kind of roam. But we want photos of people, the sponsors, you know, you got to go shoot, you know, water, essentially, you know, like the most random of things that you could imagine, it's on that list for you to shoot. And you got to make it look good, you know, just because it's you know, something as boring as a bottle of water, you still should put an effort to make it look good for the client. And then that, you know, kind of took me, the more I did them, the more like I was given more responsibilities, you know, and then in that time, it's kind of silly to think about it. It was like your graduation from, you know, starting shooting sponsors was now you're assigned to main stage. And you know, there's, you know, festivals have multiple stages. So you bounce around like, oh, I went to this stage or I went to that stage. And then finally I got to main stage. That was kind of like the validation at that time of like, oh, you know, I guess I must be doing something right.
Right.
That's kind of like how it all kept going.
Now back then, I know things have changed a lot over the years, but back then in the early days, were you having to turnaround time like that night or the next morning or anything like that? Or was it, do you remember?
Usually by next day. And honestly, that's still true to now.
Right.
Everything was, you know, cause that's when social media was just starting to kick off. So, you know, it was like that rapid, like we need it now, you know, but you wait 2 days, you know, the event's done. No one's thinking about it, you know. Especially like when it comes to press, like everything needs to be done. And a lot of the times you're editing on site, you know, you're going out shooting for 2-3 hours, coming back, editing, you know, a handful of selects. And you do that 3 times over a span of like 12, 13 hours, however long you're there. And, you know, you have a nice, you know, a team may have let's say 5 to 10 photographers. Yep. All combined, making all those selects at a time, you know, by the time the festival is done day one, you have a good amount of stuff that's already ready to send out, and you continue editing by the next day. The next morning, you're editing more. So that's still the same till now. Probably I think sometimes now it's a bit more, more rapid fire now, like where it's like, we need it now, like, you know, like yesterday now. But it's always still been the same. Yeah.
So talking about festivals, so you're involved with so many festivals. You're part of I'm assuming this was the case. I was listening to several of your podcasts that you've been on, and you're involved with some of the major, major festivals every year and stuff like that. Part of I think a team where you were the leader of the team at some point or something to that effect. Can you talk about how you got involved with festivals?
So my first festival was Electric Zoo in 2012. And that was through a mutual friend / colleague at the time who was asked to be on the team. He had already shot that festival. And then the next year he kind of just recommended me and I got hired to do that one. And honestly, it was just the way I viewed it was like, I'm just going to build the portfolio because I wanted to shoot as many festivals as I could. You know, there were so many, it was just exploding so quickly. Yeah. That it was like, all right, who can have, it's not about like who can have the best, but like, I just wanted to be well-rounded and from a portfolio perspective that one just kind of, you know, set it all off to where it, you know, now, I mean, there was a point in time I believe the most I ever did in 1 year was around 60 festivals in 1 year.
Wow.
And that was a nutty year. Cause I remember there was like a lot of stuff, like it was almost every weekend, even though I know there's 52 weekends in a year. But there was a lot of stuff that was, you know, I would be at a festival, you know, I would go, you know, shoot 2 festivals in 1 weekend because I would just like pop in and pop out sort of thing. Yeah. And that was a bit too much. I was like, all right, I'm overdoing this. I was completely dead.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where from a festival perspective. Yeah. Yeah.
And on that first festival, I'm assuming for festivals, they usually have a senior group of photographers and the new people may get sort of the less stellar shot, you know, things or whatever list.
There's always going to be that old guard. The old guard changes,
but
it's still there. It always will be. There's always festival photo teams. You know, I handle a lot of festival photo teams now that I staff. There's always going to be someone who's doing it. You know, I always try to tell guys, I was like, you know, this is not to discourage you. This is just to make you understand where you should take this from a business perspective, where it's like, if you want to be there, you should understand that you're not the only one. I have 100 people in line waiting for someone to move on.
Yep.
The moment someone moves on, everyone just kind of, I don't want to say everyone just keeps falling in line, because I, you know, there's different, you never know what could happen. You know, if you make, I may see you backstage, you come and talk to me, you show me some stuff, I get blown away. I'm like, I may want to hire you that day.
Sure.
But you know, it's like, again, it goes to the networking side. Like if you're at a festival and you see someone with a camera, go and say hello, go introduce yourself, especially if you want to be in that business. Go tell them what you're doing, what you want to do, exchange contact, whether it's Instagram, emails, whatever. I never had, like, to me, I'm not a business card guy. I'm a, here's my cell phone number. I already have my Google, my Gmail ready to go. Just put your email right in, right then and there in that moment. I'm sending an email saying like, hey, I just met you today. You know, I'm this person. I was wearing this. You know, I'll follow up after the festival, you know,
right.
You got to be ready to do all of that.
Yep.
And like I said, like, yes, there is a bit of that old guard, just kind of gatekeeping a lot of things. I'm guilty of it at times as well. I try not to be, my excuse for it is, you know, I have to go by what the client wants half the time, you know? So, you know, it's not my call at the end of the day. They're still reviewing stuff. The client will still be like, wait, who's the team? You know, they still want to see that you're putting together a solid team. But again, it's not to discourage anybody. It's to be like, hey, like if your portfolio is not strong enough to be called on, you know, to the plate at that very instant, it's just, hey, it's just to encourage you to keep doing it, to get to the point that then you get called up to the plate.
Yep. So for people who are non-photographers, and you kind of mentioned this already with the bottles and stuff like that, what is an example of list of things you require to shoot at a festival or at a show or anything like that?
I pretty much, if it's on the site, you're taking a photo of it, whether it's lockers, water stations. And that's a really big one, in, especially in the summer, all these festivals. And you have to understand, the majority of these sorts of things are for insurance purposes, because you never know. I've been at festivals that have been canceled because of overdose, you know, kids overdose and the festival's canceled. And then they want to know, it's like, was there enough water present? You know what? The photo team made sure to get that. And here it is. Believe me, the clients, one of the things they love the most is photos of water, because it means everyone's hydrated. They've done their job.
Yep.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, yes, some of them are underage festivals. I'm pretty sure all festivals are 18 and over.
Right. Or all age type things. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But let's remove the all ages ones, at least the 18 plus one. You're an adult. You make decisions as an adult. You know, at that time, that's on you. But the festival has done their job. You know, they've covered it. There's been times I've shot emergency little tents that are all over. I've been assigned, you know, here's these three sponsors, you are responsible for shooting everything related to that, where I've legit taken a can of Red Bull and took photos of that can pretty much everywhere in the festival. I even went up on a Ferris wheel, you know, grabbing festival goers. Can you please just hold this way? Do this, you know, it's silly, but it's all part of it. You have to be able to be well-rounded to do all of that. You know, so a lot of people, like, you know, they're like, oh, I just want to shoot the artist. And it's like, yeah, that's great, but I may not need that. I already have like 50 people doing that. I need a solid guy that can do that. If you knock that out of the park, that is, for at least from my end, and I know a lot of the guys who like do the hiring, that is the number one. You are going to continue to have a long career in this business if you're willing to be a team player.
Yep. And being creative. I mean, I'm a house venue photographer for Bank of New Hampshire. I don't know if you've ever been to our venue or not. We're in Guilford, New Hampshire. Maybe someday you will. I don't know. We're a shed venue. You know, similar to what you're just saying, we have to do, we're given a shot list of, you know, these are our new sponsors. We need a lot of fan experience. We need a lot of lines out front of these sponsors. We need to show the new VIP area, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So as a venue photographer, it's very similar. And a lot of times, the more creative you are with those shots, the kind of more enticing and more they want you to do, you know, get more involved in it. And like you said, shooting the artist is probably the lowest of their priorities, because they already have everyone with their cameras out already sharing that stuff already. but they really need a lot of marketing stuff for the next season and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I can absolutely relate to all of that you said.
Yeah. You know, you said VIPs, that is a moneymaker to the venue.
Big
you
time.
Make VIP, if you make VIP look like an artist, you're going, it's going to take you a long ways.
Oh yes, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. We have, we have a lot of, every year we're outdoor venue. So we're just obviously summer here in the Northeast, but every year we're adding new components to the venue, and we really want to emphasize, you know, these are new features available to not just the fans, but also the artists. Cause we have a heated swimming pool out back for the crew and artists. We have a mini golf. We have all kinds of cool stuff going on for them as well. So there's value in sort of advertising that side too.
more venues should do that.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. We're I want to say award-winning venue. A lot of country artists will actually book their tour with our venue. So for example, Chris Stapleton every year books a certain week, because he'll do three shows back to back, and then he'll just take the rest of the week off and like just get a house or something like that every year. So there's certain artists that actually use this as a vacationing opportunity as well, because we're in the mountains by the lake, all that sort of crazy stuff. So
okay,
it's really nice. Yeah,
I may just come just to watch a show. Chris Stapleton's show.
Hell yeah. So all right, so moving forward, so yeah, so we've covered your beginnings of getting involved with the festivals and stuff like that. Now, as you're doing more and more festivals and you're part of the team, are you part of the pre-planning for anything as you're moving yourself up to, you know, the head of your group and stuff like that? Are you part of pre-planning or anything like that? Or are they just handing you the show saying, here's our budget?
You go through a pre-production where it's like, you go through the meetings of what's expected from the team. You managing the photo team, making sure that everyone has everything they need, where, from flights to hotels to make sure that everybody understands the shot list, making sure, you want to take care of all your guys and your ladies. I always joke that it's, I probably spend more time from inception of a budget till, landing at a set festival, working all that, then shooting. Yep. Most of my work, it's all of that. Then get into the shoot, that's in and out, 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. But I've spent probably like a month and a half, 2 months working on and all the logistics for it. A lot of the times you work with the marketing, social media marketing team, PR teams, they have their specific selects that they want. So you want to be able to have, distribute evenly. So, no one feels like they're being overworked, making sure that, what you're assigning, that everything's being delivered. You're talking, it's a constant communication back and forth of what's needed, what's not needed. So yeah, I mean that the more you go into it, the more, you're given those responsibilities, the more you show that you can handle more and more, the more everyone's going to trust you.
Right.
I'll have, we're having production calls right now and emails for upcoming festival series. But by the time it's all said and done, when I land and everything, like no one's like questioning anything. No, everyone's ready to go.
Yeah. So your team, does your team, and this may be changing from show to show, but is the context of your team like photographers and then editors, or are photographers editing their own, or what does your team consist of usually?
So from my end, like I like to have our photographers edit their own work. I do know that there are certain festival brands that have editors already set in place because they may have already a storyline of how things should or would look like, how they want to market it. So from our side of things, it's mainly like you shoot, you edit your own work, you deliver your own work. It seems like a lot sometimes, and it is, especially like if it's 3 day festival, it's very, long hours.
Yeah.
Long hours way after the festival is done. But it's one of those things where it's like, you kind of bite the bullet in a sense, like where it's like, you know, you kind of want to step up to the plate and be like, you know, we can handle this kind of work. Yeah. You know, that's why I say, like, you know, music photographers, you know, no disrespect to anyone, but you work in music, like we can work around circles on anybody else that's outside of music. You know, I can go into any shoot and I'll have things ready within 2-3 hours of event finish. Yep. And sometimes I send a quote and I'll send, like, you know, delivery time, X, Y, and Z. And they're like, they don't understand. They're like, what do you mean? I was like, no, everything will be ready by this time. And I'll say it really quick, just like I did there. Everything will be ready, you know? And they're just baffled that our team can handle. Yeah, they're just like, oh, we thought we were going to give you a week or like that. That's great. But I'm already moving on to the next thing and yeah. living that week. So I'm not thinking about, you know, what I got to deliver from your end. You know, I want to be able to get you everything as quickly as possible.
Yeah, accuracy and efficiency are really, really, you know, a priority for things, you know, like what you're doing and what I'm doing as well.
Yeah.
When it comes to festivals, for me, as a venue photographer, we have, you know, sort of mini festivals where it's like Willie Nelson will come through and it's like the Outlaw Fest or something like that. And it'll be like 8 artists. And it'll be a long day. It's similar to a festival. Now for you, for me as a venue photographer, I'm only allowed to shoot X songs per artist, whatever that agreement is. Is that the same for you?
Depends on the festival.
Yeah.
Music festivals will always have that. Certain artists, it's all according to what the artist wants. You know, I've had artists who I'm familiar with the team who will allow me to shoot whatever I want. And then all the artists that I am familiar with who will say, like, hey man, like, just 2 songs or 3 songs, whatever.
Right.
It's like, and your job there is like, whatever amount of time is, get what you need to get in that slot of time.
Yep.
Dance music festivals tend to be a bit different. There never is like a specific, I've never experienced it. I've never heard of it. Well, you know, certain artists won't allow certain photographers on stage. But from a pit perspective, it's very rare. It's probably a handful of DJs who would say like first 15 minutes or first 3 songs. Cause like you can't go by first 3 songs in dance music. Cause that could, you know, that could mean anything. That could be 30 minutes or 3 minutes, you know? Like I said, it's a handful that would just say, you know what? I don't want anyone in the pit. I don't want anybody, around the stage. It's very rare, but it does happen. One of the bands that I tour with, we do that at some festivals where we'll clear the pit based on like what is happening in the show. Because sometimes the lead singer may go down the pit, so they don't want anybody in there interrupting. So that it's in a show by show and festival by festival basis. But for the majority, if you are at a music festival, there will be all those rules in place.
Yep.
And you kind of wiggle your room, you know, you try to figure out what you can get away with. It's easier to, you know, say sorry than ask for permission, you know?
It depends on the artist. We've had some serious security issues. Challenges with certain artists are like, if I catch you 1 second past song 3, I'm pulling your card out. So we've had all kinds of crazy stuff like that.
Oh man. Yeah. Actually, you know, it's funny you said that. Cause I always tell people, I was like, you know, if you're working a festival, the first group of people that you should go and introduce yourself to is security. Go say hello. So they go say like, hey, I understand the rules. If by any chance I'm passing it, please come talk to me. Believe me, they're going to be as professional as you are. I have never had a single issue with any venue, festival security. And a lot of the times you're going to find out that those security work multiple festivals, you'd be surprised how often they're just going to be like, you know what, I'm going to give Danilo an extra 2 songs, but we'll keep it quiet. And you never know. I was in Argentina for Lollapalooza 1 year shooting a festival, and it was this was like 2016, 21 Pilots. The head of security was assigned to that stage because it was going to be madness.
Yep.
And I had seen it. I have worked with him in probably like 6 or 7 other festivals. And when I was there, he was like, hey, man, Danilo, like 3 songs, man. That's it. I was like, yeah, no problem. Understood. I shot the entire set from the pit. The entire set.
Yep.
I had some of the most insane images because, you know, 21 Pilots, their set doesn't pick up till halfway through.
Yep.
So, that was thanks to that guy. And honestly, because he was standing next to me the whole time, the production managers and tour directors that were with 21 Pilots were like, oh, that he's okay, that he's fine. No one batted an eye. No one said anything. So be nice to the venue securities.
Absolutely. The fortunate thing for me is I work with those guys every night, or guys and gals every night. So we have a very good relationship. But I'll also point out from their perspective, from my observation, is shows get real crazy real fast depending on what's going on. So they really need to be, they need us to be in and out of their way, because people stage diving. People are, overheating, all that stuff. So they need to be in and out of that pit with emergency and all that stuff. So totally respectful for the security. And as you said, make sure you have a good connection with those people as well.
Be mindful. We're all sharing a space. So be mindful of all those spaces.
Yep. Absolutely. So one more thing about the festival, or I'll probably get more later, but for me, when I'm doing a show or anything like that, it's normal for me to shoot, for example, first three songs, run back, upload, come back out, shoot the next first three, run back, upload. And then by the time it's the headliner, then I can actually physically edit, because the shows are getting longer and longer as the night goes on. Yeah. For you in a festival environment, that's a long day. And some of those shows are really, really fast. What's your process in that situation?
For me, is like, look at the set list, make sure you understand who's when and where. Especially if you're assigned to stages, make sure you know who you're covering for that specific stage and the timing. In music festivals, where it's all genres, you have the first three songs. So you make sure you're there 10 minutes before the set starts.
Right.
Because there's always that in between of set changes. So you have the time to just sit there and kind of wait. And in that time, it'd be useful with your time to start taking photos of the fans. They're right there. It's much easier. You get some cute little shots here and there before, you get the whole action shots. For me, is try to break it down. I've always done this. I don't know why I've always done this, but I try to break it down. If it's, I'll do one for music festivals. If it's three songs, then I'm going to do two songs up front, on the railing part of the pit. If there's a middle divider, I will go a little bit further out so I can get wider shots for the third song. I try to be efficient with that time. You got to be quick. You can't just be fumbling there. You got to be ready. I sometimes, as a house photographer for a festival, sometimes I see, there may be 20, 30 photographers in the pit. And it's some are nice, some are not nice. You just got to kind of roll with the punches, for me, if you want a spot, be there early, because they're going to be there early too.
Yep.
And be respectful, even if someone's not being respectful, still be respectful. But to me, I break it down on that basis from the three song perspective. And then I'll leave that perimeter of the pit per se. Sometimes I'll go in the crowd, and try to get something wider, something, that's more electric, more energy as far as what the fans are there. From a in-house team, front of house, it's always going to be your friend. That's a secure space that you can be at.
Yep.
When you're not in-house team, try to get what you are there to get. Your responsibilities may be different.
Yep.
You may just be there just for the artist, and that's it. That whoever, if it's a publication or a sponsor or whatever the case may be, that hired you, just do what you're there, what they're asking you to do. You can do that within three songs. You won't get a huge variety of stuff in that moment. The quality beats the quantity.
Yep.
Try to get what you need. When it's in-house and you have that entire day, to me is I a lot, depending on the artist, if I know them, I will spend a little bit more time with them. If I don't know them, I'll probably, at the minimum, I'll probably spend a half hour per set. And then I shoot the set. I try to get, I'm a bit of a uniform guy where it's I know I need to get, a wide of this, a 360 wide of everything, up close, little moments, little small details of the set, things like that, and the fans and whatever interaction I can get within that time. And sometimes you get, lucky and you get amazing moments. Sometimes it's, you know, it's kind of just like any other day, you know, it's just another artist just plugging along. And then I kind of just kind of I'm mindful of that. And then 30 minutes and then I move on and right back to the shot list. What do I have to shoot? All right. What section am I in? Are there sponsors here? All right, let's tackle X, Y, and Z sponsor. And I go one after the other, after the other, after the other. And it feels a bit uniform. It feels a bit robotic at times, but try to get as much as you can like early on. So then once you have covered everything, then you can go back and then you can be artistic. You can be creative. You can give them extras, you know, but at least try to cover all your bases.
Yeah.
From a timing perspective, in the terms of when it's a long day, you know, you just got to pace yourself. You know, it's a long day. You have the privilege that, you know what, if from an in-house perspective, that if you miss something in day one, at least you have day two, and hopefully you have a day three. If it's one day, then, you know, just got to, you know, strap your boots on and, you know, just get to work.
So are you uploading and editing at the end of the day, or are you doing that in between?
At a festival, in between, I'll go and shoot every for like 2 to 3 hour blocks, and then I'll go and dump cards. And I'll, as I'm dumping, I'll do probably like anywhere between 10 and 15 selects. You know, three dumps now, you know, there's 40 photos, 30 to 45 photos in there. And that's plenty from just a select perspective. You know, you try to have a variety of what you're delivering. But you know, you start, like I said earlier, you start adding photographers, 40 photos, let's say times five, times six, you know, that's a lot of photos that you may not think it's a lot, but in that moment, when it's live, that's a lot of photos.
Yep.
So it's always like that. And then obviously at a festival, you try to edit the headliners first, because that's going to be the first thing that's going to be posted.
Yep.
Where, you know, try to make sure you get great production shots, because obviously that's what really sells a festival. They don't really care of an up and close headshot of whoever, you know, they've seen a million of those. Get creative with your production photos. And that's going to, you know, that's one of my mentors early on said, he was like, you know, leave the stage and go to front of house. And that's where the show is. You know, that's where fans really came to see. Yep. And I learned that a long time ago. And that to me is, like I said, front of house is always going to be your friend.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. I mean, that's my same process as well. I'll do first two in the pit if that's what's allowed. And then from there on, I'm going to try to get wider, get more fan interactions, get more of the lighting environments, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. So I want to come back to festivals in a moment, but I want to start talking about your touring stuff. So at some point you start getting hooked up with like the Chainsmokers, Florida Georgia Line, a bunch of bands. How does that, what was your first experience with touring?
The first one was, so my first experience with touring was with a smaller DJs. And I remember I had done my first tour with this house music DJ. It was a week's worth of shows. Mind you, like I said, I still had my other life at that moment. This was like sneaking away where I took PTO, you know, to go do this.
Yep.
And the moment I did that, I was hooked. I was like, yep, this is what I'm doing. This is my career. I got to figure out a way to make this happen.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I want to say it was like probably like a few months after that, one of the artists that came to the venues that I worked at were having a bus tour, and I couldn't do it. They asked me to do it and I couldn't take the time off. And you know, this is fresh Instagram year. So everything was being posted, and I was watching while I was in my desk at work. I was seeing the tour unfold, and it ate at me. I was like, oh no. Like, I knew, like, feeling that way was like, you know, I don't want to feel like that ever again. So yeah, I just went into it, and it was a matter of like networking. That's how it all came to be. You know, Chainsmokers came to that club in like 2013, 14-ish, for the first time. And then I saw them three other times, and then I saw them at a couple of festivals. So became friendly and acquainted with their team and management. And then came a point in time where I was like, you know, I enjoyed, you know, who the guys were, just as people. I enjoyed their team. Their management team was so great to deal with. And I was like, it was a firefly in 2015.
Yep.
Where one of the Alex from the Chainsmokers, I posted, hey, we're looking for a tour photographer. Like, if you have any recommendations, send them. But I was on site when he did it. Like, he was on site, I was on site. His trailer was like 30 feet from our content trailer. I walked out and I was like, hello, I'm here. Why aren't you asking me? And he said, I remember he was like, I thought you'd be too busy with all these festivals. I was like, I mean, I kind of am, but we can still talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of sparked it, or, you know, I threw it out there. I was like, I want to do this. So if it's anything available, just let me know and I'll work things out. And this was June. And then in August is when they emailed, he was like, hey, do you want to come on tour? And this was 2015. And I was like, yes, I had a festival that weekend and I put someone else. I was like, nope, I'm not going to say no to this tour. I had another one of my colleagues cover for me. And I went, and I did that tour, and that's, you know, what are we, almost eight years later.
Yep.
It started from, does anyone know anybody who can tour? And I saw it. I was editing and I saw his post pop up and I stopped editing. I walked out and I was like, yes, this guy here.
Right here. Here I am.
Yeah. And that's how it kind of started with them. And it's, you know, it was little by little. It was like, you know, I think that year I might've done maybe 10 shows. And then in 2016, I did a little bit more. And then in 2017 is where like it just blew up. You know, it was arena tours in the US and Europe and Asia. And yeah, it just went crazy after that. And then because of what the stuff I did with them is how I got connected to a lot of different artists. They would see what I was producing for them. And they would just ask me, can you come do that for us? And, you know, I was like, yeah, if the schedule allowed it, yeah. If the schedule didn't, I said no to more things that I care to count. But you know, it's just part of the business. You kind of just roll with it, you know, in that moment.
Yeah. When it comes to those first tours, now you had done some DJ tours and then you jumped onto the band tour. What's the difference in those touring environments for you?
Honestly, it's the same.
Is it?
Especially if it's like a bus tour.
Yeah.
You know, the crews are all the same, you know, different personalities per se, but the people are almost the same. You're roadies, you know?
Yep. So for DJ, it's still like, you still have your front of house techs, you still have your lighting techs, all that stuff still the same as an artist.
So like, you know, from Chainsmokers' perspective, once they went from DJ to the band, you know, it's lighting, video, audio, playback, you know, drums tech, guitar techs, everything tech that you could imagine, production managers, tour managers, this and the other. You know, we would travel from an internal perspective. There is roughly around like 12 to 14 members who travel with us. That's just from like any show perspective. But then arena tour, obviously, then you get the stage hands, you get like so many people. Like I think we've done anywhere between 30 and 50 crews like those bus tours. So it's pretty big. You know, it's like what we've done, 9 tour buses and like 17 trucks type deals. You know, it's a big crew.
Yeah.
And then you move that to like country world. It's the same thing, you know? The only difference, it's still the same thing. I was going to say like Chainsmokers is 2 guys and they all have their separate buses. Florida Georgia Line is 2 guys. They had their own separate buses. It's almost like identical.
Yeah.
It's just the only difference is obviously the personalities, but it's all pretty much the same when you are in that bus tour perspective. From just a DJ perspective, touring, it might just be a small crew. I've done tours with other like smaller DJs and it's been, you know, video lighting, tour manager, photo, video, and the artists. It's 5 or 6 of us max. Maybe there's an extra person here and there, but like, you know, it's usually like between 4 and 6 on the smaller like scale when you're doing nightclubs or venues like that, where it's like plug and play. They just show up. The production's already there. All bands, like, you know, some are bigger than others, you know? So, but at the end of the day, from a, it's all the same characters. It's all the same people. It's kind of, it's still run the same way, whether it's, you know, six people on a tour or, you know, 100.
Yep. So it's probably a silly question, but when you first started, was it a hard adjustment for living and sleeping on a bus?
For me, no. I love sleeping in a bus.
Yeah.
I close the curtain. I put my hands like I'm in a casket. It's cozy. It's dark. It's pitch black. Some of the best sleep I've ever had.
You're the third person that's told me that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they actually can't sleep when they get home. They need to be on a bus to sleep.
And it does get tiring after a while.
Sure.
You know, there's been plenty of times where I've been burned out where I'm like, I can't wait to get home. Yeah. And there's other times I'm like, I don't want this tour to end. You know, it all depends. It's just how you're feeling physically, mentally. Anything can change at any time. So yeah.
Yep. Yep.
But I love the tour bus. I love, because to me it's like it makes it easier as well. Like when you're doing content on the fly, you always have a space that you can just go out and, you know, even though like, you know, we always have little rooms in the venues or arenas that you can also do edits, but it's, you know, everyone's there together. You can create more. It's just, you know, it's like that family atmosphere. Yeah. I was ready from day one. I was like, yep, I'm ready to jump on this bus. Let's go.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, I've been told this many times, you usually have maybe 12 people on a bus all squished together. So personalities and really kind of being kind and understanding to everyone, because you really don't have much for private space, obviously.
Yeah. And that just goes with anywhere in the world. Just be respectful, be mindful of everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So talking about going on tour, I don't know if it's the first tour is the question for this, but how did you decide what equipment to bring with you?
I brought everything.
So you just put everything in a case and just brought it all.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a two body guy always. And every lens I own, I brought it. Cause I never wanted to be like, oh man,
right.
I left that at home. Why? You know, I need it now. So yeah. I never want to think about what I left. So I just bring everything with me, two flashes, just in case. You just never know. Yeah. 10,000 batteries, you know, I would probably travel with like 10 terabytes.
Oh, wow.
And with photo, it's not necessary because you just never know. To me, it's like, I don't want to have the ifs. What if something, like, to me, I'm ready. I'm ready to go, like, have it. To me, it's like, there's no such thing as overdoing it when you're preparing and packing for something that you're going to be away from your home base. It's just better just to have it with you.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And for with the artist, what is your protocol? Or is like management giving you a list of things, or are you just kind of going through with whatever? What's the protocol for the artists?
There are certain things that management will ask. When you're on those kind of tours, you're being brought in for a specific reason, and mainly is because they like what you do.
Yep.
And you're there to do the stuff that they like, you know, from you. So your job is to deliver on the reason why you got hired. You know, from time to time, you'll have to do VIPs, you know. You may have to, you know, sometimes the label has requests. For me, I treat every tour like I would treat a festival. Where I'm like, yeah, I'm not going out and getting sponsors, but I'm still covering the people, the atmosphere, the artists themselves, you know, BTS, like anything that you could imagine. I'm doing a 360 full coverage of that tour in case, you know, X, Y, you know, the label needs this, you know, we need a photo of the guys, you know, by the trucks, or we need a pyro shot, whatever it is, I'm taking a photo of it. And, you know, by the time I'm done, I've taken probably the same power shot like, you know, 1,000 times. But you just don't know. You just got to be ready to have all of it.
Yeah.
So I treat it as that. Like, just cover everything. Just shoot everything. Sometimes I'll go and shoot merch. You know, like, oh, can we get some merch shots of people wearing men? Sure, let's go. That's like any festival. You know?
Yep.
So, you know, and some tours tend to be a little bit more lenient, a little bit easier, where it's like, sometimes I'll just go in and I'll just shoot the artist and that's that, you know, and that call it a day. But again, it's on a case by case basis, depending on how big it is, how big the tour is. The bigger the tour, the more responsibility you have.
Yeah.
You know,
is your turnaround time for that similar to like a festival, or are you kind of doing it whatever is convenient for you?
Yeah. I don't know if I did this to myself. Cause I don't think there was ever a time where anyone said like, you need to deliver this by this time. And I've said this out loud so many times, I can tell you, I have to stop saying this out loud, because I don't know if I'm ruining a standard or if there is a standard. You know, I don't want to say I set a standard, but I'm like, I just don't want to. Now it's too late, but it's, I always say, you know, 2 hours, if you're delivering 2 hours, photos, now video is different, but from a photo perspective on a tour, if you're delivering 2 hours after the tour, it's already too late, because you're already in the next city. You're already traveling somewhere else. It doesn't matter. You know, you try to have it
2 hours or 2 days. You're saying 2 hours. Oh, 2 hours. Okay.
Yeah. I would show ends. I go straight to the bus or little office, and I'm immediately editing 40 to 50 photos. Yep. You know, everything's going to social media. There's nothing there that requires, like, nothing's being blown up on a billboard. Just deliver like something that could you recap the show, because one of the best posts is right after the show, the artist can say like, thank you, Oklahoma, Boston, whatever. It is the most interaction you're going to get from a tour perspective when it's city by city. If you're delivering the next day, you're in Boston, and the next day you're in Miami, you know, your fans that are there are really going to be Miami people looking. They're like, ah, we don't care about Boston, you know,
right.
That type of deal. So yeah, to me, it's like, just deliver. You can go back and edit more and deliver more as time goes on that tour. But from you just deliver the, I was deliver the bangers of what you capture, just to give that, you know, you covered, this is what the show looked like. Get ready, next city. Thank you, this city, you know.
Yep. And for us in a venue, that's the same, sort of the same rule, where we have to have the fan experience. I mean, our priority is the fan experience. And really, at the end of the show, we want to be able to, as fans are leaving, we want them to be able to tag themselves and say, this was awesome, and share it and all that sort of stuff. So absolutely. Yeah. Hey, thanks for watching part one with our guest, music photographer Danilo Lewis. We hope you enjoyed it. You can check out our other guests, our other episodes on all your favorite podcast locations. You can also watch on YouTube by searching for Tales from the Pit podcast. Head over to our website, talesfromthepit.net. I'm your host, Jason Levasseur. Hope to see you on the next one. This episode was edited and produced by me, Jason Levasseur. Visit talesfromthepit.net for more episodes just like this.
What was your typical day like on a specific tour day? What was your routine for a day?
I'm an early riser.
Yep.
Doesn't matter, at home, on tour, it doesn't matter. Yeah, if I'm going to bed at 4 a.m., I'm not getting up at 7. But usually we're in bed by 1 on a tour, because the show is done at 11:30. I'm done editing by 12:30. The artist comes back to the bus. We're already moving to the next city. And once that bus starts moving, my brain just shuts off. I'm like, done. That's it. In the bunk, out. I've already done my job. I already delivered the photos. The artists, they can do whatever they want now. But I wake up 7:30, 8 latest. I go and usually we'll have like our team always gets us an office, a content office that we have. I'll go and set up all my stuff in there, get ready for the day, and wait for the artist to wake up and walk in, and we'll start mapping out. Sometimes we'll have days where we plan to go out and do stuff. Sometimes they don't want to do anything and you just kind of just roll with it. You know, a lot of the times it's a very mundane type of day. Like most people think it's, we're probably having crazy parties every day. It's like, no, you know, we'll go work out, have lunch, then dinner, and then prepare for the show. You know, by 6 p.m., you know, we're doing interviews, VIP runs. Then, you know, then it's quiet time, you know, for the artists to, you know, have their own time, you know, rest their voice, do a little bit of, you know, voice lessons, whatever the case may be. And then, you know, shows, you know, by 10 shows starting. So it's, you know, a lot of it is repetitive. A lot of it's just getting used to a routine. But sometimes you get those days where you may just go, you know, go-kart riding or shoot guns or whatever, you know, and those days are always fun because it just kind of breaks the day. But a lot of times it's the same schedule every single day. There's nothing romantic to it. There's nothing glamorous to it. It's work. You know, you're there to work.